going to take over media. Yeah. It's like a subset because it can't exist without actual news.
Yeah, and it's just, it's also indicative of like our increasingly fragmented media ecosystem. It's not just young people that are getting bored of mainstream media. Substack, it seems like everyone and their mother has a Substack right now, and some people do very well on Substack. And there's a lot of new media companies popping up. And I think another thing that we haven't talked about yet is that the actual content that they're putting out on TikTok, on Instagram, makes very little money. There's no creator fund. They have to get people off of the social media apps and subscribe to them on Substack or subscribe to their podcast or whatever. And that's a really hard ask of people. So I get why we're talking about this right now. I don't know if we're going to be having the same conversation in 5 years when people, these news influencers aren't able to keep doing what they're doing because the money just isn't there.
Part of me wonders if that's why there aren't that many Canadian newsfluencers. When I compare our political newsfluencer industry, if you could call it that, to the U.S., it's a completely different world out there. And maybe that's because people in the U.S. make money when they post these kind of over-the-top breaking news, everything in your life has gone to videos, or World War III just began yesterday videos. They make money when people view that. And maybe that's why there's more of them. Then I'm like, okay, do I think if Canadians made money on their politics videos that there would be more of them, that we would have more people being newsfluencers? And I actually don't know if I think that's the case, because I also think we have a very different cultural relationship with politics in this country than Americans. It's deep for them. It's profound. It's part of their identity and their social lives in a way that I don't think exists here. Americans are way more political, I think, than Canadians. So yeah, maybe if there was more money, we'd have more of them, and this would be a completely different industry. But maybe not, because we don't think about politics and talk about politics the same way that Americans do. They're just so over the top and declarative and sensational that I wonder if we would see it kind of slide into that here in Canada, but not so sure.
I think our newsfluencers are just as rage baity as theirs are, and we know how that turned out for them in the States. So I think it's a really bad thing that so many people get their news from here.
Would you become a newsfluencer? Have you thought about it, like, ever?
I've thought about it, but the thought of relying on the algorithm and the amount of views you get as a direct influence on how much money you have, that sounds like a horrible way to live. And I'm very happy with a consistent paycheck.
That's fair.
I don't think I could be the audience growth director, the ad person, the brand deal person, and a journalist all in one, because I barely find enough time to find stories as my full-time job.
There was a moment where I was like, we're missing out on connecting with a huge segment of the population that does want politics news, that does want news in general, just in a different way, in a different medium. And so I was like, what if I just try? Because I don't want all the Canadian politics news to be this overly sensational, rage-baity type video. So I was like, okay, let me sit down and try to make one of our episodes into a TikTok. And it was hard.
It's very hard.
Not for the reasons that you think, but for the very mere fact of, I felt like I had to be like a strong hook to get people into the video. And I'm like, now I feel like I'm lying and I'm like being overly sensational when the news isn't that crazy to begin with. So I kind of had this moral quandary where I was like, I could continue doing the longer form, more in-depth, meaningful work that I'm doing, or I could turn it all into a 15-second rage-baity piece of garbage that I know will do well on the algorithm, because that's the only thing that does well on the algorithm.
It's tough. It's tough, man.
So the newsfluencer life is not for us. Podcasting, that seems like a good fit. Sam, You've been on this show before. You know what we do. We duly note stories that aren't getting the attention they deserve. What do you have to duly note for me?
I wanted to do something loosely sports related on this duly noted because we never get to talk about sports on the network. So a couple of weeks ago, the LA Rams and the Clippers announced a sponsorship agreement with the Rwandan government promoting tourism to the country. It's like a little advertisement on the jerseys that says Visit Rwanda. And if you watch soccer, you would know that Rwanda also sponsors Arsenal, Atletico Madrid, PSG, which is Paris Saint-Germain, and formerly Bayern Munich. Now, Rwanda's GDP is growing, but it still ranks 33rd out of 54 African countries, so it is not exactly wealthy by any means. And yet they pay £10 million a year, that is 18.8 million Canadian, to Arsenal to advertise on their jerseys. Can be a bit weird if you think about it, but that's not what I want to talk about. I'm not sure how much you pay attention to African politics, but Rwanda is currently involved in a pretty horrible conflict in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. It is accused by the UN of backing a group called the M23 Rebels, which is waging conflict in eastern DRC and sponsoring child soldiers. And there are some really horrible things going on. The fighting has displaced millions of people. It's greatly worsened the humanitarian crisis and heightened regional tensions. Now, when Rwanda announced the partnership with Bayern Munich, Deutsche Welle covered the partnership extensively, and public pressure made the team pull back their sponsorship. And this Rwanda deal was signed less than 2 months after the end of a similar deal with Qatar, which was also highly controversial. And it caused significant rifts between the fans and the club. So even after they backed down, Deutsche Welle ran a piece with the header saying, "At first glance, the Bayern Munich's decision to end its commercial deal with Rwanda appears a rare moment of football morality. But dig a little deeper and the club's motivations seem not so straightforward." So a lot of criticism coming from the sports media in Germany. Shifting back to the U.S. for a second, I looked for a long time to find someone in the sports media ecosystem speaking about this. There was a ton of articles talking about the new sponsors for the Clippers and the Rams, but I only found one mention of this from an ESPN article about halfway down, completely buried. They said, "Last year, ESPN published a report detailing how the NBA's relationship with the Rwanda government and President Paul Kagame was central to its expansion in Africa, even as the league looked past human rights abuses far worse than those it and its players actively oppose in the United States. The abuses include reports of imprisonment, torture, murder of political opponents, as well as the funding of child soldiers in the neighboring DRC." And Rwanda is on this huge charm offensive on the global stage, building new partnerships on the surface, trying to de-escalate the conflict, but actively backing this rebel group, M23. So this is just such a prime example of sports washing, and the American media has paid no attention to this. I get that it's halfway across the world, but I think it deserves a little bit more criticism from the sports media. And as we look forward to the World Cup in Saudi Arabia, and the Asian Winter Games, also in Saudi Arabia, I think we need to be paying more attention to what companies are sponsoring what teams and just being a bit more savvy of the motivations behind these sponsorships.
Duly noted. Sam, I want to duly note something that Canada's National Observer launched very recently. It's super cool. It's a tool for journalists. They describe it as a powerful tool for fighting disinformation. It's called Civic Searchlight, and it's the brainchild of investigative journalist Rory White. He's a data journalist, and he was hired as National Observer's technology and democracy reporter. Love that title. Basically, it's a tool for following and reporting on local governments across the country. According to the National Observer, Civic Searchlight, this tool, is, quote, "dragging cities and towns into the 21st century by making 550 municipalities' public meetings easy to search all in one place for the first time." They've been testing this tool for months in-house. And Jimmy Thompson, who's the editor-in-chief, says that It's already proved useful in breaking stories. He says it helped them uncover a climate denial network targeting local governments. It helped them track backlash against Doug Ford's Bill 5 and dig into everything from AI to oil giants and to even track how their own reporting ripples out across the country. The best part is it's free for journalists and researchers.
Sorry, how does this tool work?
I signed up. I've made an account. So I'm going to walk you through how you do it. You open their tool and you can enter a keyword or you can search for a municipality. Let's do the city of Calgary. I've clicked it. It basically pops up every municipal meeting, all the interactions that happen in politics, and you can watch a clip of it and download a transcript. So if you're like looking for a specific interaction or moment, or you're just looking for information on, I don't know, Doug Ford's Bill 5, it's this searchable transcript system, video system, and just makes life so easy. I kind of wish that it transforms beyond just municipalities and goes to provincial government and the federal government's meetings.
That is very cool. And it just goes to show, if somebody in journalism has an ounce of technical skills, it could completely transform the way you report things. So more tech people totally. And data people in journalism, please.
Hear, hear.
Duly noted.
That is our show for today. Thank you for joining me. You can email me about it at noor@canadaland.com. You can find me posting on Twitter, Blue Sky. Sam Connert, where can people find you?
You can find me at sam@canadaland.com. You can email me. I do read them. You can find me on the Discord. You can find me on Twitter at Sam Connert. I'm no newsfluencer, though. And you can catch me Tuesdays on The Politics Show.
This episode is produced by the one, the only, James Nicholson. The associate producer is Jules Bougiel, who also did the fact-checking. Mixing and mastering is by the man with the thighs of steel, deadlifting influencer, Caleb Thompson. Our director of audio is Max Collins. The editor and publisher of Canada Land is the OG newsfluencer, Jesse Brown. Theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca.
Find our way home. This is Diana Cardiff, and you're listening to On the Tracks with Jen LaFranc and CJSF 90.1 FM.
But my name's LaFranc.
This is Diana Cardiff, and you're listening to On the Tracks with Jen LaFranc on CJSF 90.1 FM.